The opinions expressed here on the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast are solely those of the presenters, not the opinions of Cedarbrook Community Church or Mountain View Community Church.
Hi, this is Brian Doyle with the International Sports Federation and Global Serve, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McCabe.
And we're back, episode 73 of the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast. Hey, everybody, this is Steve Anderson.
And I'm Matthew McCabe, and we are the Youth Ministry Sherpas. We're helping youth workers to keep going. This episode is sponsored by ServeHQ. Stop using clunky and unsafe communication tools in ministry. With a new tool from ServeHQ, your email and text announcements can live alongside your team chats in one unified platform that's built just for churches, with ease and accountability at the forefront. Go to servehq.church to find out more.
How are you doing, man?
Oh, I am doing just fine and dandy on this Monday. Finally recovered from my big volleyball tournament weekend where I go and work like 16-hour days for like 7 straight days.
This whole volleyball subculture is a revelation to me.
It is a big subculture.
So the thing that you do is you set up for this girls volleyball tournament at the DC Convention Center.
Correct.
Like 140 courts, 120?
122 volleyball courts. We build them at a sport court in the convention center.
Yes.
We have 948 teams that come in, somewhere around 12,000 volleyball players and coaches.
Oh, gosh.
Another 20,000 parents and grandparents. It's a deal.
This is like a $30 million enterprise, isn't it?
I have no idea. It's way above my pay grade. I'm the director of court operations. I just set the courts up and tear the courts down and help run the tournament during the weekend.
The thing is incredible. I helped out one year, came down with the team and helped set up some courts. I've never seen anything like it.
It's pretty unreal, honestly, the logistics that go into it.
This empty convention center. And at the end of the day, there's 120 volleyball courts perfectly arranged, perfectly spaced.
Ready to go.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So do you run into people often when you're out and about, you know, from church, that people that know you, but sometimes you don't always know them?
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, this tournament this tournament was like this a hotbed.
Yeah.
I ran in. Now, there were quite a few people that were there that I knew were going to be there, so I made a point to go watch their kid play and connect with the parents.
A bunch of my kids were there playing.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. But during setup day, the second day we were setting up and kind of arranging everything, there was this guy that was setting up a T-shirt booth. He was working for a T-shirt company that was going to be one of the vendors there.
Okay.
And we were working, and about 15 minutes into kind of what I was doing and he was doing, he was like, "Wait a minute. You're Matthew McCabe. You're one of the pastors at Cedarbrook."
And I thought you were going to say, "You're a youth ministry Sherpa."
Well, yeah, right, yeah, for sure. And I was like, yeah, actually, I never saw this guy. Well, I probably have. I just didn't recognize that I knew him, but he knew me, and it was that awkward, like, "Hey, you doing? Hey, man, how's your daughter doing?
Good to see you too. Joe, Jack,
so,
Bob, Billy, yeah, that guy,
right,
oh, buddy, dude,
the volleyball tournament,
pal,
grocery store. I'm always in the grocery store, and I'm just, I have a confession to make. Can I make a confession?
Of course.
So I shop on Mondays, which is my day off.
Yeah.
And quite often, I will see someone from church. There are times in which I will just a friendly hello as we're passing in the aisle. But there are some people that I see actually pretty regularly that if I see them, I will
disrupt my
shopping routine and find a different aisle to make sure that we don't interact.
You should just put on a disguise.
That would
Why don't
be
you
a
put
little
on like a fake mustache.
That would be
and
a little
a wig.
That would be great. Here I am in Wegmans with a fake beard and a wig. That's not weird at all. But yes, that's my confession that I have often avoided people so that we don't have contact.
You don't need to confess to me.
I'm
with
you. You're with me.
I'm the introvert, man. If I know you and it's my day off, I don't want to see you.
Let alone if I don't know you.
If you know me and I don't know you, I definitely don't want to see you.
Running into people from church.
Oh, man. I ran into I ran into somebody a couple weeks ago that I hadn't seen in a few years, but it was somebody that I didn't have the best end of the relationship with.
Oh, yeah. This sounds intriguing. I know.
It was a former youth worker.
Oh.
Who was on my team, and it was the only person that I've ever actually officially fired.
You fired a volunteer?
From the youth volunteer team, yes.
Wow, and you ran into him?
I did.
Just recently?
Yeah, at Five Guys.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and, you know, he was super friendly, and, like we're not going to, like...
You're not going to blows.
No. He was friendly, and I was friendly to him, but I didn't really want to have a conversation with him, and can I make a confession?
You can make a confession, please. We've started it down. Let's go.
This is Confessional Monday. I liked him just as little as I did the last time I saw him.
So your interaction with said individual confirmed that you made a wise decision a few years ago.
It did not change my opinion in the least. It's terrible. I'm sorry.
No,
forgive me, Lord.
You don't need to be sorry. I think that was a confirmation that you did a hard thing,
yeah.
Which was let a volunteer go. It seems weird to even say that. How do you fire?
Yeah.
It's a kind of a running joke, right? How do you fire a volunteer?
You can't fire me. I'm a volunteer.
Right. Well, the reality is sometimes, in rare cases, you have to.
Yeah.
Which is what we're going to talk about today's episode. It's kind of our third of a three-part series.
Uh-huh.
We talked about finding volunteers. We talked about equipping and coaching those volunteers. And now we have to finish it off with how do we correct volunteers? And in worst-case scenarios, how do we let them go?
Yeah. But before we go there, it's time for...
Sherpas.
Say what?
It's your turn today, sir.
Deborah McKenna. 63 years old, from Portland, Maine.
Okay.
When she was a young lad.
She wasn't a lad, Matthew.
That's right. When she was a young...
Lass? Lassie?
Is that right? I don't know.
I think it's lass.
When she was a young lady.
Okay.
She was given, from her boyfriend, eventually to become her husband.
Oh, that's sweet.
When he was going off to college.
Okay.
He gave her the class ring from Morse High School as a token of his love for this young lady. And then he went off to college.
Class rings were a thing then.
They were a thing back then, by the way. Yep.
Okay.
She proceeded to lose said class ring somewhere in Portland, Maine. She doesn't know where.
Hmm.
40 years later.
Okay.
The ring was found.
But she married this guy. Okay.
She married this guy. 40 years later, the class ring was found,
uh-huh,
buried in 8 inches of soil in a forest in Finland. Somebody was with a metal detector, found
what?
A ring, then not only found the ring.
Was it on the finger of her deceased husband that she buried in Finland?
No, are you sure? No, I read the whole article. No. But not only did this person find this ring, but then went through the trouble to try to track where did this ring come from, what does this ring mean, and how do I get it back? And the ring was eventually returned to Deborah McKinney. At 63 years old, she received the ring back. And how the ring got from being lost somewhere in Portland, Maine, to a forest in Finland remains a mystery to this day.
To a dead body in Finland, the body of her ex-husband.
Steve, you're making this story more than it needs to be. There's no dead body in this story.
It would be a better story with a dead body.
It would be a better story.
But I think
it's a weird story. I think it's a weird...
Super weird.
And it's a little touching, though, too, that somebody would find a ring and then go through the trouble to figure out. How does someone from Finland figure out what a class ring is from 40 years ago from Morse High School in Portland, Maine?
Why was somebody in the forest in Finland with a metal detector?
Well,
this is weird.
Steve, this is your retirement staring at you.
I don't know.
I can see you on the beach just in a Speedo, just cruising down the beach with a metal detector.
Oh, my
gosh. You've seen those people at the beach. They're out there. What are they finding, like 8 cents a day? Like, what's happening here?
Wow. I'm just imagining myself in a Speedo. Oh, it's terrifying.
Let's not do that.
It's terrifying. All right.
All right. Well, so back into the episode, continuing our stream of thought on volunteers, a little volunteer series here.
So in a perfect world, everybody on your volunteer team would be the perfect fit.
They'd kill it.
Completely dedicated to it. And you'd never have any kind of disruption, any kind of disunity, any kind of problems at all.
Right.
It would be just a place of great health and peace, right?
A utopia, as it were. I love what you're describing, but Steve...
That's not real.
I don't believe we live in a perfect world.
That is true. So there's going to be people along the way that aren't always so easy to incorporate into your team, right?
Yep. They're not easy to work with. They don't live up to expectations. Mm. And so we enter a really uncomfortable, at least it, I know it is for me, very uncomfortable situation where we have to speak into a volunteer's life.
People are messy.
Yeah. And volunteer is the key word there.
Right.
I find it difficult to speak into people who are employed. Right?
Right. Well, that's a beautiful sound.
There's motion in my backyard.
Oh, is that what that is?
Anyway, yeah, I think the volunteer is the key word there because it is difficult enough, at least I've found, to speak into people who draw a paycheck, who are employed to work there if you've got to do a little correction or if you've got to do a little encouragement. Mm. That's difficult. I think when it's a volunteer, somebody who's giving of their time, sacrificing their family, their whatever, to be involved in your ministry, I think that makes that conversation even more awkward.
Well, it's the double-edged sword because you're trying to build a ministry to students. That's the target audience. But in the midst of that, you're also shepherding and loving your volunteers in their relationship with Christ. But you're also trying to get them to do something for you.
Correct.
So, yeah, there's that kind of touchy point between, you know, I need you to be this kind of person and do these things, but I do care about you too.
Correct.
So at what point does that divergence require action?
Right. Well, I think the divergent point comes when we have to realize that our ultimate role, we are student pastors, youth workers. You said it before. Our target audience is youth. And so anything that threatens what we're trying to accomplish with our students has to be addressed. As uncomfortable as it is,
okay,
it has to be addressed.
Okay.
And I think that can take lots of different forms.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there's levels of immaturity that can contribute to that. There's people who can be really divisive, disunifying, maybe, pursuing their own thing at the expense of what you know the overall group needs or what you're asking of them.
Right. People can be inconsistent because they're volunteers and they have this whole other life.
Right.
Right. Jobs and families and things like that. They can be inconsistent.
I think they can also be, people can be emotionally unhealthy. I think when a youth leader is coming to the youth ministry to receive their own ego strokes,
correct,
or heal some ancient hurt, you know, from their past as a teenager because they weren't accepted or whatever, like if they're drawing their identity and their sense of self-worth from students, that's not going to be a good place either.
Right. It can be very, very negative for the students.
Yeah. They don't care what our issues are for the most part, right?
Right, because they're there for to feed something
that's
missing in their life.
And that just leads to an unhealthy place for a youth leader.
Yeah.
So.
And there are lots of different degrees
of
all of these things. There's different levels of that. And so when it comes to letting a volunteer go, at least one of the things that I believe is that's a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get to that point. I know that there are times where you have to get to that point, but I don't want to. So how do we step in? Mm. How do we correct or move someone who's dealing in these areas?
Yeah, boy, that's tricky, isn't it?
It can be.
So the easiest way, you know, they say that it's better to never hire than to have to fire.
Right.
Right. So we want to make sure at the front end, and we talked about this during the recruitment episode, that you're recruiting people who are on board with the mission to begin with.
Correct.
We had a woman come to us one time a couple years ago. She brought her daughter to the group for the first time. It was the first time ever. And she stayed with the daughter, which is fine. We let parents do that first,
sure,
you know, first few times, check it out. But the very first night, she said, oh, I'm going to be a youth leader.
Oh.
And she told my wife that. And then she kind of proceeded to share how she loves to shadow her daughter everywhere. And I'm like, oh, this is huge red flag.
Right.
First of all, you've been here like an hour and you're telling me you're going to be a youth leader. You're telling my wife you're going to be a youth leader without asking the youth pastor or having that conversation.
You don't even know what's involved in being a youth leader.
I don't even know who this person is, and she doesn't know anything about us.
Right.
So that wasn't going to happen. So that she came another week or two, and then I had that awkward, difficult conversation. Mm-hmm. Said, look, if you want to be a youth leader, I'm going to have that conversation with you no less than 6 months from now. I mean, you got to be around for a while first. And then we'll have a conversation about it. And it's not going to be revolving around you shadowing your child.
Correct. Right. So you have there are systems that you can have in place when it comes to recruiting volunteers that can help you get to a point where maybe you don't ever reach this point because maybe you can redirect them. I know there's been several occasions in our context where we do a thing called the ride-along, right? I think we talked about that a couple episodes where you know, spend some time just coming and checking it out and then have a conversation. And that has saved our bacon in more than one occasion where a couple, 3-4 weeks into the ride-along, okay, this is probably not going to work out. I can see some of these potential issues that we just talked about, the unhealthiness or the divisiveness or the immaturity, I can see those already manifesting themselves. And so it's a little easier at that point to say, are there other places in the church that might more suit your skill set? Because I don't know that this one is. And in most of the cases, not all, in most of the cases, that person had already come to that conclusion as well and needed a little nudge in that direction to not feel the Christian guilt of abandoning this.
Right.
I told you I wanted to help, but now I really don't want to. And I think from a leadership standpoint, we have to help people who might already know that it's okay. In fact, it would be better both for you and for the ministry if we did find a different place for you to serve, to redirect.
So you're having a clarifying conversation up front, and you're kind of giving a time frame. Here's a few weeks to check it out. There's no commitment here.
No commitment.
We're going to both evaluate this, and we're going to have a very direct conversation at the end of this process or during the process to determine whether this is a good fit.
Set those expectations up at first.
Be really
and
clear
up front. That conversation is less awkward. It's still awkward.
It's still awkward.
But it's less awkward.
You know, you're a really unhealthy person, and I get the sense that you're drawing all of your self-esteem from trying to be cool with the kids, and so I don't think this is going to work out.
Yeah. Well, you could say it differently, Steve.
Okay. So
you've got that. Now, that's best case scenario. You headed off at the pass, right?
Sounds
so easy. But as we all know, people change. Mm-hmm. And people are people. Like you said, people are messy.
And we make mistakes sometimes letting people join the team that we probably shouldn't have in the first place.
In hindsight. Maybe there was enough there to not let them. All right, so let's talk about some of these different things and the different degrees and how you can handle. Let's start with, what about someone who just wants to do their own thing? They're not really on board with a team.
Yeah, there's a couple reasons people might be that way. One is that they are immature.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of think that if they're not leading it, that they're not getting the strokes that they need. So I had a leader like this one time, wanted to do his own thing, to the point of, like, when we do our family groups, I give them questions. They're reflecting on the message. That's the content of the small groups. And they have complete freedom to go down rabbit trails or whatever, and they often do, which is supported. But this person wanted to every week do his own thing. Like, he was bringing his own thing and said, we're going to do this thing. And I was like, no, that doesn't fly, partially because he also had a partner in the group who wasn't on board with it.
Right. So now there's tension between the two leaders of the small group.
Yeah. So I had to step in there and say, no, you need to do what we're asking you to do. There's a philosophy, there's a vision behind this thing, and try to redirect them, which it worked. Mm-hmm. In that instance, it worked.
Yep. You can also run into that, I think, people doing their own thing when you get people who are used to being in charge. Right?
Yeah,
I've had several volunteers who, in their day job, they're the boss.
Right.
They run the team. They manage tens, if not hundreds, of people. And then they roll in on Sunday night, and snotty-nosed youth pastor is telling them what to do. And and good people, but they're just not used to that. And so there's a struggle with, no, I think I actually have a better way to do this. And so that, like, I know in my case, that's manifested itself in someone complaining quite regularly.
Oh, really?
About, well, why are we doing this? I think it'd be better if we did that.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was a conversation that said, I give the best hours of my week to thinking about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And I appreciate that you have other ideas, but you're giving a couple of hours on Sunday night. I think I'm the one who's going to set the vision here, you know? And sometimes those kind of people, that's exactly how you have to talk to them. Very, very directly, which is not my nature. It's not mine, but I have one volunteer in particular that over the years, if I'm going to make a point with this volunteer, I'm going to have to speak to them as if they're my subordinate and they're working for me, which is not normal for me. And they respond because that's their world. That's their world 45, 50 hours a week at work. So, it's very difficult for me.
Did younger Matthew McCabe ever have a youth leader who was close in age to you, who was pretty immature, acted like one of the kids, maybe did things that were risky or inappropriate, and you had to be like not only their friend, but now you had to be their supervisor?
Interesting question.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone specific. I can think of people that I've had on my team because I like to recruit some of the – I like to have a good age range. We talked about that a couple episodes ago. And so you end up with some younger people who – have not yet quite matured, and so sometimes they make decisions that when you're the person in charge and is going to have to take the phone call from the parent whose kid leg got ran over because they were ghosting in the car or whatever, you think, no, we can't make that decision. And I've had that, but I don't remember anybody like that I was like really good friends with that was that way.
Yeah.
I'm thinking you do.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't specifically, but I can imagine that a lot of people listening to this might be in that situation. Because if you're a younger youth worker and you have some of your friends helping you, they may not have the level of discretion or wisdom that you're bringing to the position.
Because they don't have the responsibility that you have.
Exactly, yes. And so you're going to have that awkward moment with them when you tell your friend, look, I love you as a friend and you're a great youth leader. You need to understand there's a bigger picture here. You need to sometimes think like a parent. You need to think like the primary leader. You need to think like the senior pastor of the church. Like you need to be thinking about more than just the moment of being cool and accepted by a bunch of teenagers.
Right. That's a tough conversation.
Those are tough.
Yes. I mean, it's a tough conversation if I'm 10 years older than that person. I can't imagine how difficult that conversation would be if they're my if I was at Topgolf with them on Friday night in a like we're buddies kind of role.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That'd be tough.
Okay.
What about inconsistency? This is a difficult one, right? Because again, we're dealing with volunteers. We ask them.
Yeah.
We have expectations for what we hope for them on a consistent basis of them being present in order to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, i.e., your regular meetings, your retreats, your missions trips, your things like that. And there are just some volunteers who either can't make it happen because of other demands on their time or won't.
Okay. I put these into three categories.
Okay.
Category one is the one who is in a life stage where they're not consistent because they just have demands. And we've talked about on many episodes how this isn't their life, right? It's our life. It's not their life. This is a part of their life. So there's ways for people to be involved even though they can't necessarily be 100% in all the time.
Super consistent, right?
Yeah, and that's okay. We need to love them and shepherd them through those seasons. Category number two would be the one who's just kind of flaky, but they're still with you. And, you know, maybe they just require some extra patience. The way that I would address that would be to just make sure I have depth on the team. I might put them in a family group with other leaders so that they're not leading a small group by themselves. So if they don't come,
you're not stuck.
It's okay, as long as they're communicating.
Yep.
We make that clear up front. You got to communicate when you're going to be here and not going to be here. And the third category is the ones that they're just flaking, and they're worthless to us.
That's strong. That's a strong word there, Steve. I love that. That came out really easy.
No, I say that because I've had a couple leaders through the years that they were good at it, but then they just didn't come.
Right.
And it became point of irritation and aggravation. And I would say to them, where are you? Well, you know, something came up, or I can't be here for the next 6 weeks because I'm doing something that's, you know,
yeah,
not worthwhile.
Whatever, like, right.
I'm playing softball for the next 6 weeks. I'm not. And then you just got to have that conversation and say, I'm sorry, but if you are not going to be consistent, then this isn't the season for you. You got to step out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds harsh.
It does, but it needs to happen because I think our students, they're going to see that consistency. The showing up communicates something.
It does.
The not showing up also communicates something. And as the leaders of the group, we want to make sure we're communicating the right thing. You're important.
Yeah.
This is important. Therefore, I'm here more often than I'm not here. And when you can't do that, and it's really hard. I'll admit it. It's really hard.
It is.
It's really difficult because we're put in a position as the leader, as the youth pastor or the youth leader or whoever's in charge, we're put in a difficult spot because we have to make judgments on what's worthy of being inconsistent and what's not. And I feel very uncomfortable doing that, but often I have to. You know, the mom who just had twins, right?
Right.
Okay, look, that's legit. That's an easy one. Okay, you're going to be a little more inconsistent for a while. Let's work with that. You're great. When you're ready, we'll be ready for you to come back. The person who says, I just joined a softball team and I'm going to play softball for these 8 weeks, but then I'll come back right after it's over. Really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
That's what we're going to do? Because that you're communicating something to me about where this thing ranks in your life. And I don't know if being here is the thing to do because it's going to cause tension. So you got to have the conversation. But it's hard.
It is.
I don't want to make those judgments, but sometimes I have to.
I've almost always erred on the side of grace in this. I mean, I'm non-confrontational. And so I will give people the benefit of the doubt and I will work with it and I will let it go as long as I can because I don't like those conversations and I want people to have a place to serve and feel valued. So sometimes I will confess, I've just kind of let it go.
Let it ride.
And let it ride until it just moves out to sea. Their group graduates and they realize it's over.
Right.
Because it wasn't worth bringing it to a head.
Right.
It just let it go.
Yep.
They were inconsistent. They were inconsistent through the graduation of their class, and then they just moved on.
They just moved on.
Yeah.
Or they come back around.
And maybe I should have done it differently. I can think of specific cases where I wish I had done that differently, but I didn't. It moved on. So that's the way it goes.
I think communication is just absolutely huge when it comes to the inconsistency. Is do you know why they're not there?
Right.
And can you more often than not try not to judge that as long as they're communicating with it, as long as they're a valuable member of your team? I think then it's easy to extend that grace.
Right.
When there's not communication,
yeah.
Boy, I think that's really hard.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a tough question because this one I think is one of the harder ones.
Okay.
We talked about when people are unhealthy emotionally, right? When somebody, when it's clear to you that somebody's motivation for filling whatever role they have in the student ministry is a little bit unhealthy, right? I've had a volunteer in the past who it was very evident that this volunteer was looking for some emotional stability from the students in their group.
They're looking for their significance.
Right. This. And would be devastated if they planned a off youth group, small group, sleepover or cookie making party or whatever, and nobody would come. Would literally be devastated. And so it was very clear to me that there was a little bit of unhealth. How do you address that? Because that's really sensitive. How do you have that? You have to have that conversation.
Hey, Karen, Would you mind having coffee with so and so?
Are you really throwing your wife under the bus here?
No, I'm just saying, I just don't know. I mean, you're in your case, I think you're probably talking about a female youth worker who's maybe closer to your age.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know your team, so I don't know. Yeah. But I'm just guessing.
This is actually a story from a previous church.
Okay. That just makes it really awkward, though.
Yeah, it's super awkward. Right. It was a female leader, but it was something that had to be addressed. And the conversation was really rough.
Well, that's why I'm thinking it would be good to have another person in that conversation.
Yeah. In hindsight, mm-hmm. I probably should have either had somebody else have lead the conversation and I was a part of it, or have somebody ride along with me in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do either of those things, and mm-hmm. the conversation went poorly because I'm revealing to someone something that they're clearly blind to, right? It's not like they went in and said, I have deep emotional needs and I'm going to get 16-year-olds to meet them for me. When they don't come to my cookie baking party, I'm going to be devastated. They didn't go into it. They're blind
to it. Did she unfriend all of them on Instagram?
This was actually again, this is a former church. This was pre-internet. This is pre-internet, so you had that.
Well, but I'm just not going to be your friend anymore.
Well, I mean, just I was in that conversation. I was bringing up something to this person that they were unaware of, but it was pretty obvious was real, and that's what made it difficult. But it had to happen because it was putting students in jeopardy. Is too strong of a word, but there was guilt that was being given to them about not coming to the baking party, and so it had to be addressed. But man, that was rough.
I think what we're really saying throughout all of this episode is we didn't always get this right.
We're still not getting this right.
Exactly. This is really hard.
Really hard stuff.
Yeah, because you're talking about people's feelings and their self-esteem and trying to shepherd them and love them, but also care for the students and the ministry and build vision and unity. So, yeah, it's, you know, if shepherding students is hard, shepherding leaders is just as hard.
Just as hard. Maybe even harder.
Yeah. You don't fire a student.
No, exactly.
You might have to fire a leader.
And often, again, you work with students, you can say, oh, they're 16. They just haven't a fully matured brain yet. What do you do with somebody who's 35? Or 47 or whatever
late.
It is.
It's too late.
So that brings us to what happens when all of our efforts to, you know, correct or change something or set new expectations, they fail, and we reach a point where any one of these things, the disunity, the immaturity, the emotional unhealthiness, the inconsistencies, reaches a point that their presence on the team is detrimental to either the team or the students or both, and we have to say, Your service is no longer needed on this team. We have to let a volunteer go. How do we do that, Steve? You didn't even want to answer the question, do you?
Well, I've only had to do it in that fashion one time.
One time?
Yes.
I've done it twice.
And it just happened. It reached such a head in the moment that it just happened.
I couldn't avoid it.
Now, thankfully, there had been conversations along the way. So in this particular case, it was someone who was, they were divisive.
Right.
They were disunifying. They were kind of spiritually arrogant. And so they were always criticizing something we were doing, some vision that we had, some direction, not just me, but sometimes the church. It was driving the senior pastor nuts too, which helped me.
Yeah, that helps you, right?
But we were friends. But there was a moment where, and you'll remember this because
I was a part of the story.
Part of the story. We were doing this combined event with other churches from the area that we had just started, set a vision for, and we were excited about it.
It was a very cool thing.
It was bringing churches together who weren't all necessarily of the same theological bent or whatever. It was just come together in the name of Jesus, bring students together, which we thought was a beautiful thing.
It was great. Really wonderful.
But this person was not on board with this because the churches weren't, I'll just call it out. For him, the churches weren't reformed enough.
Right.
He wanted it all to be, you know, hyper-reformed kind of
stuff. Tulip, Calvin, let's do it, right?
Is always for me a bit of a problem. So I asked him before the year started, knowing this was happening, as he was re-upping his commitment for the year, are you with me? Can you support what we're about to do? And he said yes.
There you go.
And so then one day after church, as everybody's leaving the service, one of the kids asked him, hey, are you coming to this event tonight? And he said, no, I won't be part of that heresy.
I'm going to go ahead on a limb here and think that you didn't think that that was with you.
I was torqued.
I bet you were.
Oh, my gosh.
I imagine you were.
I was. Because, first of all, he had given me his word. Second of all, he said that to a student who had no idea what he even meant by that.
Yeah.
And was very confused. And most of all, he was undermining my leadership.
Yes, he was.
Which really ticked me off.
That chapped your hide, didn't it?
It did. And I'm not a domineering, authoritative leader. I'm a chill guy. But I was ticked. And so I called him up, and that was the end. I mean, I was like, dude, you cannot say this to a student and undermine what I've worked hard to create. You are not with me. You mm-hmm. are correct.
Yeah, you are not with me.
Yeah. Now, it was awkward, honestly, because I think I can say this. This person was related to an elder.
Mm. Oh, you can't get any better than that, right?
You can't get any more convoluted
related to the chairman of the board.
But you know what? It all went down okay because there had been a process and conversations. And like I said, he had been driving the senior pastor nuts.
Yeah. I think those are the keys. Process and communication, right? So have we, the whole first part of this episode, have we stepped in? Have we had multiple conversations about, okay, I'm seeing this.
Did not catch this person off guard.
This is not helpful. Yeah. I need it to be more this. Can you do that? If we've had a couple conversations like that and there's still no change,
right.
I think another important step in the process is to bring in leadership.
Yes. Right?
So whatever your context is, maybe you have a direct report who runs the student ministry, or maybe it's just you and the senior pastor, and so you got to go talk to the senior pastor. To bring that person in for two reasons, I think. One reason is so that they are informed, because it has the potential to not go well. There could be blowback. There could be problems.
This is the kind of stuff that gets youth pastors fired.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that there's some leadership people above you that know the situation, know what you're doing, know why you're doing it. I think the second thing is it's a great accountability for us, for me, for you, because if you have to explain to someone who's now outside of the situation, they don't serve on your team, they don't maybe even know this person well. In my case, if I went to my senior pastor for one of my volunteers right now, it's possible this senior pastor doesn't know this person other than by name.
Right.
Right. And so if I have to explain, okay, this is what happened, and then I did this, and then this is what happened, and then I did this, and now we're here, and I need to let them go.
They want to see the paper trail.
They want to see the paper trail, and that's good for me because that's a confirmation that I have done everything that I could do to correct this before I had to let him go, as opposed to me reacting emotionally, which I am fully capable of doing, right? I'm fully capable of letting a volunteer go because I don't like them and not have that process. And if I have to go to somebody else and say, I'm going to let him go for this reason, that gives them an opportunity to go, I think you missed a step or two. Maybe we should do this first instead. And I love that accountability because I know how susceptible I am to making a rash emotional decision.
It takes you off the hook, too, because it gives you another voice backing you up with the volunteer you're letting go.
Yeah.
I've had this conversation with leadership, and we are in agreement that this is what's necessary.
Yeah. So the process, if you do get to the point where you've got to let someone go, and we just hope that you don't, but people are messy.
It might happen.
Life is messy. Make sure that process is in place so that you're not hanging out there because people get fired over this kind of stuff.
And sometimes it might happen quickly. You know, you could have an issue of immorality or something like that.
No-brainer, right?
Yeah, which you have to deal with. And the same things apply in terms of communicating with your leadership about it so people know what's going down.
Yep.
The last thing, though, is you have to deal with the fallout, right? Get some fallout with your team and with your students.
No matter what happens, there's going to be some kind of fallout. Even if it's no-brainer decisions, like there's going to be a student or two that were on that person's team.
Yeah, so there's no easy solution to that. It may depend on the circumstances. In the case I was referring to, I had a couple students who were really close to this person, kind of like his disciples, and had to have that really hard conversation with them. I actually took over their group for a time. I think in the case of one, the guy came around really quickly. In the case of the other, took him maybe longer. Not sure if he ever really did agree with what I had done, but it's okay.
Right.
I got to say this, though, man. When that situation ended and that volunteer was let go and moved on, I felt like the Holy Spirit had blown wind into my sails. I felt so relieved. I felt like the youth ministry had a new life. Like people weren't working on eggshells anymore. I felt like there was just this freedom that we found that was just life-giving. And it was good.
Yeah, I will say.
It was like lancing a boil.
Yeah, I will say that in the two cases in which I let a volunteer go, I had a very similar experience where when all the dust settled and you worked through all of the fallout or the issues or whatever, that there was a really good season after that, which is a good thing to remember. My senior pastor tells me this all the time. Often in leadership, we trade short-term pain for long-term pain, right? So the short-term pain of having a really awkward conversation with a volunteer that says, this isn't working out, you're going to need to go, and the potential pain of the break in that relationship or whatever is real. But the long-term pain of not having that is also real, and it's longer.
Yeah.
And so those words that my senior pastor has said to me on multiple occasions, because I am a conflict-averse person as well. I'm a people pleaser. I'm not naturally drawn to conflict. So he has had to speak those words into my life often. Short-term pain is better than long-term pain.
I'd rather get the surgery.
Rip the Band-Aid off.
Get it done and recover than deal with the injury forever and ever. Yeah. It's good, man.
It's good stuff. Not easy stuff. And hopefully this episode has helped you think through how to help correct some of your volunteers that are maybe straying from your expectations for them. Get them back on the right track so that you don't end up in this position. But if you do, hopefully you've got some processes and some steps.
If you do, I hope you have a guillotine.
You can't say that. What the heck? Wow, this took a turn for the dark right there.
I hope it never happens to our team again, but maybe someday it will.
It might.
We'll see.
It might.
This episode was sponsored by SurveyHQ. When it comes to equipping your volunteers and leaders, you have to try SurveyHQ. They have an online training tool with hundreds of done-for-you training videos and simple tools to create your own. Go to servehq.church to find out more.
Well, we will be back next week with another episode of the Youth Ministry Sherpas.
Until then, Sherpas out.